All right, so Parshas Noach. It is exciting to be back at the beginning of Bereshis still. So I want to take a look at Perek Tet tonight, which is the story of recreation. It's the makor, maybe, for the Zayin Mitzvos B'nei Noach. It's certainly the instructions that Noach has given after the Teva, and then some other instructions from God. And try to understand it a little bit. Rabbi Sachs points out that the first nine prakim of Bereshis is pretty simple. I mean, in light of last week's shiur, it's hard to say it's pretty simple, but let's assume that we're taking it literally. So it is pretty simple, he says, but tragic. It's creation, decreation, and recreation. I do like that he uses the word decreation as opposed to destruction, but God basically undoes the world and redoes it. And really the only thing that God says is, I just want you to know, this is essentially man's fault. So God makes a promise that he won't destroy the world again. But interestingly, he does not make a promise that man won't destroy the world again. There is definitely a possibility that man will destroy the world. And, you know, we certainly know from watching Tanakh going forward, man doesn't necessarily do the greatest job of keeping his part of the bargain. And just living in the 21st century, we're also pretty clear that man doesn't do a great job keeping the world a good place. But God makes the promise that it's no longer going to be his, it's no longer going to be his decision to destroy the world, so to speak. He's going to leave everything up to man. So the question is, if Perek Aleph is creation and Perek Tet is recreation, is it the same kind of creation? Are each the same? And that's kind of what I want to try to figure out together today. So let's take a look at the first source. While we read the first source, what I would ask you to do is try to find the Mila Mancha as we are learning it. So it starts like this: Vayivarech Elokim et Noach b'nav vayomer lahem, pru urvu umilu et haaretz. God blesses Noach and his sons, and he says to them, pru urvu, right? Be fruitful and multiply and populate the world. Okay, that's important because there was no world anymore other than the eight of them. It is a possibility that the reason why God is saying this to them is they're like, after seeing the destruction, they've already come out of the Teva, they've brought Korbanot. It could be after all that, they look and say like, oh my gosh, like we're never, ever, ever, ever going to want to do this again, right? The idea of why would anybody want to bring children into a world like this? So God says to them, I'm commanding you that you have to do that. So God then says, your fear, right, the fear of you will be on all the animals and all the birds that fly, that, you know, populate the land, and the fish as well. And all the, I guess, the bugs and stuff that live there, yelo achla, can be eaten, or anything that goes on the land that moves, you could eat. It's the same thing as trees. So basically, God is saying to them, you know, unlike pre-flood, you can now eat animals, but the only thing is you can't eat the blood of an animal, and the blood of their souls. I will seek miyad kol chayad, ershenu miyad adam, miyad ish achiv, ed rosh, and nefesh adam. So God says, I'm going to seek out anybody that takes the blood of anyone else. Shofech dam adam ba'adam, damo yishafech. Anybody who spills the blood of anybody, I will have their blood spilled. Ki b'tzelem Elokim asata adam. Because man was made in the image of God. V'atem pru revu shertu v'aretz urvu va. And with that warning, I ask you to fill up the land. So there are those that say that this is the makor for the Zayin Mitzvos B'nei Noach. But it's a little bit hard to understand because really it seems to be that there is maybe two mitzvos there, right? Don't kill and don't eat the blood of an animal. Right, so it's a little hard. So The Rambam is actually very helpful in this. The Rambam, it's not in the sources because the sources were printed before, but the Rambam, it's Perek Tet in Hilchot Malachim Halacha Aleph. So he says like this: Al Shisha Dvarim Nitztava Adam Arishon. Adam Arishon was commanded in six things: Al Avoda Zara, Al Berchat Hashem, Al Shvichot Damim, Al Gila Rayos, Al Gezel, Al Dinim. Adam Arishon was told that you can't worship idols, you can't curse God, you can't kill, you can't commit adultery, you can't commit theft, kidnapping, and you have to set up a court system. And afal pishe kibla kulam kibla heim biyadenu Moshe Rabbeinu v'hadat notelehem mechal divrei Torah shal elu nitztavu. So the Rambam adds in that even though Moshe Rabbeinu then added this to the Torah, right, there are mitzvos in the Torah, and the truth is, even if Moshe Rabbeinu had not done that, these are intuitive mitzvos that that one would have to do. Nonetheless, it's clear, he says, that these were commanded to Adam. And then he continues on. It says, Hosef and Noach Eiver Menachai. And Noach was given Eiver Menachai, Shemer Ach Basar Benafsho Damolo Tochelu. Nimtso Sheva Mitzos. Those are the seven Mitzos. He then goes on to say that Avram got Mila and added Shachris. Yitzchak got Mais, added Maaser, and then also added Mincha, and Yaakov added Gid Hanasha and Ma'ariv. And then in Mitzrayim, Amram was given a bunch of mitzos as well, and then Moshe Rabbeinu came and completed the 613. That's what he says. So the question is, where does the Rambam even get this from? Six mitzos, so Adam Arishon. So he says that, he quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which says that there's a pasuk that says, Vayitzav, and the Gemara then goes and darshins all the Sheva Mitzvah B'nai Noach from there. What's weird is that the Gemara actually wants to suggest that all seven were given to Adam HaRishon. So which one doesn't make any sense?
The eating off of a live animal is one.
But why? Right, they weren't allowed to eat the animals. So the Kesef Mishnah points out, says there's no way that this Gemara could be true, that they got the seventh mitzvah of Eiver Menachai. So he says Eiver Menachai came from here. So if that's the case, though, then these psukim are not teaching us over here the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. Not only that, but you would even go one step further to say that the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach are not really the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. They're really more correctly the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Adam V'Noach, right? It's a collective group of mitzvahs that went to Adam and to Noach. So why is it attributed to Noach? So maybe it's called that because every single person is a descendant of Noach that had to keep these mitzvahs. But probably, more importantly, somehow these mitzvahs are going to be the group of actions that the people are going to have to do to avoid a repeat of the Mabul. Fine. So that's the first thing. So the question we have to ask on these psukim is, why do we have them right after the exit of the Teva? Like, what is this teaching Adam HaRishon at this point in time? So that's the first question. And now let's take a look at the second part of the first source. Vayomer Elokim el Noach v'banavi tol emor. God says to Noach and his son, saying, Vani hinini mekim et briti itchem. I'm going to keep my covenant with you, with Zarachem Acharechem, and your children afterwards. The eight kol nefesh achayash eitchem ba'ofer ve'ima v'chol chayat ha'aretz eitchem kol yotzeh teva l'chol chayat ha'aretz. And this is a covenant that I'm making with the animals as well. V'akimoti briti eitchem v'leikareit kol basar o mimeimei ha'mabul v'lo yeh od mabul l'shachet ha'aretz. And I'm going to keep this covenant. Nobody, no flesh anymore will die from the waters of the flood, and there will never be a flood again. And so God says, this is the brit that I'm making between me and between you and all the animals. And so the rainbow will be up in the clouds, and that will be the sign. just a beautiful tangent that I saw this week. Rabbi Rasner says, why did we pick a rainbow? So he gives two beautiful answers. So the first one is the rainbow is the sign of a bow. So normally when you have a bow, right, which side is the side that you do not want to be on?
Curved side.
The curved side, right? Because that's where the arrows are shooting out of. So when we have a rainbow, which way is the curved sign going?
Hashem.
It's going up to, right. So Hashem is basically saying, even though it should be directed at you, I'm directing it my way instead. And then he says a beautiful idea. Also, he says the reason why it's all the colors is to say that, like, the reason why this happened is because you couldn't see the all the nuances and the differences and all the colors in the world. And if you could, then you probably wouldn't be in this place at all. Fine. So we're going to have a rainbow, and that's going to be the sign between us and God. And when something happens, I'm going to put that up in the sky. And I won't destroy the world. And I'll see the keshet, the rainbow, in the cloud, and I'll remember this brit that I have between me and between you. So God says to Noach, this is the sign I have between me and between you. All right, I'm sure the Mila Mancha is pretty clear. Right,
I was looking for one point.
Right, why does God have to write this over and over and over and over again? It's true. And what's the deal with this covenant, right? So clearly, I think it was Shirley that said, the Mila Mancha is Brit, right? Seven times we have Brit. So I'm going to, without looking at the psukim, anybody want to guess what word we have seven times in the creation in Perek Aleph?
Tov.
Say that again.
Tov.
Tov, yeah, good. Awesome, Shmuel. Tov. So the first time the world is created, it's created with the idea of Tov. And the second time it's recreated with the word Brit. So what's the difference between Tov and between Brit? So Rabbi Sachs says like this. He says that what the idea of Tov is, it's on the object, right? My meal is good. My work is good. My family is good, right? That's where we're talking about an object. A brit, right? A covenant is what? It's actually on others. It's saying that I have a contract with other people. So he says, the world is not going to be good anymore because God has already admitted, Yetzer Lev Adam, Rak Ra Menu Rav. Man is inherently bad from his youth. So it's not going to be coming from the word good. But, and the truth is, when man was alone and it was only man was fine. The world could have been Tov because man didn't have to worry about other people. But now that there are other people, God says, the nature of what we have has to be a brit, a deal between people. So how does that exactly...
Can I offer a different interpretation of the difference between Tov and Brit?
Happily.
Tov, at the first time, seems hopeful, and Brit is contractual. It's probably not that far off from what Zach is saying, not surprisingly, because he was a genius. Hashem made the world in the first place. We don't have to go back last week and how the world got completely screwed up very, very quickly, but he was hopeful that the world would work out and people would do what they're supposed to and then follow, and hope and good is a feeling, but Brit is a covenant, a contract. It's concretized in the writing. This is what it has to be. We're writing it down. It's no longer a hopeful.
Excellent. I like it. Yeah. Okay. Amazing. So... There's definitely a lot less, it's not a feel-good type of creation, it's much more technical, this is what's going to be, this is what has to be, this is what you have to do, understand that you have to keep these laws, not just don't eat from the tree for a little bit, And there's going to be a sign of it, right? Like maybe that's why we need so much in the like last couple of psukim over and over again. Do this. There's going to be the keshet. You don't want to mess up. That's the oath that you're doing all the right things. Okay, excellent. So,
question.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No problem. No, all good.
I don't think it's part of this shiur, so I apologize if you don't want to not spend time on it. That's fine. Pesach Beis suggests that, which is nothing about Tovim, but it suggests that the animals didn't fear man before this situation pre-flood. They did. So what was the situation in the world before versus now? Like, I mean, again, we don't have to talk about this. It's not really any of the focus of what you're...
So I think that, I mean, I don't think it's far off from the topic, but the world beforehand, the man and animal were much more, were closer to peers in certain senses. Meaning the reason why we are, you know, we're one step up the food chain, right, on most of the animals, right? There are some animals that would
make the argument that animals should have gotten a step up after man completely screwed up. And why would Hashem give us control after how badly? Because it was, I assume it was mostly humans' fault for the world being destroyed, not the animals. Unless there's theory that
Rashi says the animals were bad too.
Right. So
if that's true. We don't know. That's enough.
Well, the only reason the humans screwed up so bad is because they had the ability to do so, and if the animals had that ability, they would have been screwing up.
Right. Meaning.
But why make us their? Why make us superior to them? We deserve that. Let it be a part of the
edge. We've been selling a look in.
Right. I mean, I think everybody's saying the right things. You know, first of all, I do find it. I'm not sure. There are midrashim that say that the animals also messed up, but what does that exactly mean? So it says that they interbred with others. So, you know, they weren't sticking within their own species, but that's a hard one to really understand exactly what that means. Like, animals don't have intellect, they only have instinct. So instinct would not, why are you punished for your instinct? So I have a hard time with that. But I think it's possible, I mean, this is probably like the famous answer that, you know, the Bali Musar or whomever would, you know, give, is that the reason why man needed to be uplifted over animal was because until now, because he considered himself a peer to the animal, so he played down. He said, like, we're on the same level, so I'll work on their level. By putting them above animal, God is saying, you have the intellect to be better, to be bigger, to be different than that. So I need you now to take care of that and to do that. I think that's probably the basis for why that is. But I think the biggest thing is you're now going to be able to eat animal, right? So when the animal knows that they're going to be eaten, that's a pretty scary thing. I don't know.
Well, so it's very specific. There's a point in time that coming out of the table, what just happened for the last year? For the last year, Noah was actually their servant. He provided for them. He took care of them. They were in close quarters. There wasn't the natural, or what you would consider natural fear of animals and humans and that whole interaction. They were all confined together, and God's kind of saying, hey, we're going to reset this. This has got to go back to the way that we know, where I'm not assuming it was before, but it has to be different than it was in the table. The way it was in the table is not the way the world was supposed to be run.
It's so interesting, because I thought you were going to say the exact opposite, which I think you can make the argument of also. I think you can make the argument that that in the Teva, Noach and his family were actually the equivalent of God to the animals. Their entire survival was dependent upon Noach. In the world, they found everything they needed on their own, but they were in their cages, if there was such a thing on the Teva, and if Noach messed up or Noach got lazy or whatever, like, they would die. So you could almost,
they're not intellect for that.
No, but they have instinct for that. Meaning, like, Pavlov's dogs know that they're gonna get fed when the bell rings. After a year on the Teva, they probably knew Noach's footsteps meant whatever they eat was coming really soon.
Right, after the footstep. The bell doesn't ring. They don't start killing people and ripping them apart.
Well, it's a method, right? If they're at the lion attack,
right?
I don't think he's subservient. He's just he's a source of food, but just as an alternative to the forest or whatever.
Right, but I think the zookeeper has, like, meaning the zookeeper has a very different relationship with the animals than the tourist in the African safari. You know, like the animal knows and loves, unless it eats the zookeeper, but that doesn't happen all that often, right? It recognizes that the zookeeper has a very, you know, important piece in its life. I just thought, Sterling, you were going to go that way. I think you can make the argument, you know, either way.
You could go both ways. But again, if you use the zoo analogy, the animal in the zoo can't be put back in the wild. Like, they've been spoiled. They lose their instinct. That's not the way they're supposed to be. Because they're getting fed. They're getting taken care of. They're having the food brought to them. And they lose the ability to hunt. They lose the ability to survive, you know, other predators. And they have to go back to that. That's the ideal. Not the zoo. The zoo is not the real world.
Right.
The table was like the zoo.
Right, but if you took the Bronx Zoo and you took the walls of the Bronx Zoo down and stopped having visitors and turned it into a self-contained community like the wild, I think they'd learn pretty quickly. Meaning, I think that within a day or two, the giraffes would probably be the hunted.
Done.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. They're not because they're still sort of semi-combined and you can't have that.
They'll never survive the gangs there.
Right.
And if they go into the real Bronx, they're probably worse off than by being in the zoo. But I think back to David's question, I think that's probably the reason why Pasuk Bet finds its way here. So we definitely took a look at Perek Tet. Let's take a look at Perek Aleph. Shmuel saved us a little bit of time by pointing at the Mila Mancha there as Tov. It is seven times. I just picked Yom HaShishi, so we only have it twice there, but it is five other times. So let's take a look at the beginning. God says that the land should have animals of all kinds of types, wild animals, domesticated animals, and it was. And so God made chayat haaretz, the wild animals, the domesticated animals, everything, and God saw ki tov, it was good. Vayomer Elokim, God said, Nasa adam b'tzalmenu kidmutenu. God says, let us make man b'tzalmenu, in our image, kidmutenu, like us. V'yirdu b'dgat hayam vof hashamayim uvavimah v'chol chayat haaretz aromes ala haaretz. And they will be stronger, and they will rule over the animals of the land. Now that sounds very similar to Pasuk Bet that we kind of spent a little bit of time just now on. But what does that really mean? Right? Man is only like over the animals in the sense that man is intellect. Maybe man gives them their names. But what does that mean from a practical standpoint? It doesn't seem like there's much going on that way. Pasuk of Zayin, Vayivra Elokim et Adam b'tzalmo, b'tzalmo Elokim bara oto, zachar nekeva bara otam. God creates man, b'tzalmo, in his image, b'tzalmo Elokim, in the image of God, he created him, male and female. Vayivarech otam Elokim, vayomer lahem Elokim, pru urvu umilu et haaretz v'chivshuha, urdu b'dgat hayam, uvov shamayim v'chol chaya romesed al haaretz. Now this sounds very familiar. We had this also, pru urvu umilu et haaretz. We have both of them in both sets of psukim. Vayomer Elokim hini natali lachem kol esav zorei zera shel panei chol haaretz kol esav eitz asher bo pri eitz zorei zera lachem yelachla. God says to them, all the trees on the land are yours, enjoy them. Ulachol chayat haaretz chol vo shemaim chol romei sal haaretz asher bo nefesh chaya kol yarech esav lachla vayichein. You and the animals can eat all the vegetation on the land. It is interesting. It seems like Chavtet is directed towards man, and he's told to eat the trees, whereas Pasuk Lamed seems to be directed towards the animals, and they're told to eat the Yerek Esev, the grass. Vayar Elokim kol asher asav, hinei tov ma'od, God sees everything. This is probably one of the most hopeful psukim, David, in the entire Torah, where God looks, he sees the entire world, hinei tov ma'od. It's amazing. V'yarev v'yvoker yom ha-shishi. And it's night and it's day, the sixth day. So the question is, what in the world is the difference between the two of them? So the biggest common thread besides Pruvu is Betzalem Elokim. Right? God, and by the way, I was curious, so I didn't even get lazy. I checked the Concordatia. The phrase Tzalem Elokim only appears in two places in Tanakh, Perek Aleph and Perek Tet, by creation and recreation. So by creation, God says to the angels, let us make man in our image. And then when God actually creates God man, it's Bitzalmo, in his tzelem, in his image, Bitzalem Elokim bara oto. So what about Pasuk Vav above? It says, Ki Bitzalem Elokim asa et ha'adam. What's the difference between those two psukim? I know it's late.
Singular, plural.
Okay, but that, I mean... Well,
if it's Betzalmenu Kibbutenu.
Okay, well, that's because he's talking there to multiple people, right? Nase Adam Betzalmenu. When he's talking to the angels, he says, let us make man in our image. In Pasuk Chavzayin, when he actually creates it, it's only one person. So it's Betzalmo, in God's image. And Betzalem Elokim bara oto. He created man in his image. But let's compare Chavzayin to Pasuk Vav above, right? From recreation. Is it really the same thing? Betzalem Elokim bara oto, and ki Betzalem Elokim asa et ha'adam. So Mati's right. We have to look at who the subject of the...
It's not the same, right? The one is talking about Adam, and what is one is talking. So it's only created. Man is not being recreated,
right?
That's a huge difference. So he's talking about Adam, the Adam that already is created,
right?
In Perek Tet.
But also that the subject of the pasuk, meaning Betzalem Elokim bara oto, God is saying you create the one created. Are Betzalem Elokim. But look at Pasuk Vav. Shofech dam adam badam damo yishapech. Right? If you spill the blood of a person, meaning God is talking to the spiller of blood. And he's saying to the spiller of blood, you who kill another person will be killed. Why? Ki Betzalem Elokim asat adam. Because the person that you killed was created Betzalem Elokim. In Bereshit Aleph, what God is saying is, you man, the man that is created was made Betzalem Elokim. As far as I'm concerned, you are Betzalem Elokim. What God is saying the second time around is, it's not that you that I'm speaking to is created Betzalem Elokim, but the person that you harmed is created Betzalem Elokim. And so what Rabbi Sacks says is they're not the same. Creation and recreation is 100% different. In creation, God is saying everything is tov, everything is good, you're good, you, man, are amazing. What God is saying the second time around is, in order to make this work, you have to understand there's a brit, and that covenant is how you treat other people. And that's why when I talk to you, I want you to understand that you're created. It's not that you're created with Tzelem Elokim that I care about. Yes, every man is created with Tzelem Elokim. But other, right? The person that you're making a covenant with to get along with, the rest of humanity, they're created Betzalem Elokim. And so what God is saying is, if you want the world to work, what has to happen is you have to realize that everyone was created Betzalem Elokim. And if everyone was created Betzalem Elokim, how could you be violent towards others? God is essentially saying that I'm giving you the solution to how the world could work. So now, obviously we know that with all that, it's very hard because man does not always rise to the occasion to treat others properly. But that's what God is challenging man to do. Look at other people and recognize it's not you that I care about that's created Betzalem Elokim, but it's others that were created that way. I want to end with a beautiful vart that Rabbi Sacks has. So he says, we say this bracha often, borei nefashot rabot v'chesronan. What does that mean? God has created souls, many of them, v'chesronan, with their chisronot, with their deficiencies. A weird bracha to make, right? We're praising God for how amazing the world is. And we're saying you created so many people with their deficiencies. So I'm sure that there's a lot of great answers that one could suggest. Mr. Josh Rowe from Manchester, England, shared the following with Rabbi Sacks. He said, if I have no deficiencies, I wouldn't need anyone. Chisronot are what create a need for other people. So God is saying, in this bracha, what Chazal were saying is that we acknowledge our interdependence upon everyone else. The challenge is, can I see that A, I need other people, and B, can I see the differences in all the other people, specifically people that are very different from me? And perhaps that's why B'Tselem Elokim Asad Adam, when God points out that the other is created B'Tselem Elokim, is followed by a big focus on the keshet, on the rainbow. God is saying, look at that rainbow and see, it has every color in it. Well, mankind also has every color and every shape and every type in it. Can you see the differences in them and yet recognize that despite the fact that other people are created, are that way? Yeah, ki b'tzelem Elokim. I'll end with the Mishnah in Sanhedrin. The Mishnah says, l'hagid gedulato shel Kodesh Baruch Hu, to show you the amazing gift that God has, if man makes coins and they're fashioned after a template, then every single one is going to look exactly the same, right? Imagine if you take a photocopy, if you put a piece of paper on a photocopying machine, hit 100, every single one will come out exactly the same because they're all based on the template that they're copying. Umelch Malchi Amlachim HaKadosh Baruch Hu Tava Kol Adam Chotmo Shel Adam HaRishon. God did the exact same thing. He made a template of man, Adam HaRishon, B'Tzelem Elokim Asauto. That's how God made him. V'Ein Echad Meyam Domen L'Chaveiro. And yet every single person is exactly the same, only in B'Tzelem Elokim, but in every which way he's different. The amazing part of the world is that everybody's created with Tzelem Elokim and yet is so different. That's the gadlut of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's the world's job from Noach on to remember that, to recognize that, and to appreciate that, and to hopefully, in seeing everybody else in their own Tzelem Elokim, to respect them. Man has struggled with that for thousands of years. I imagine that man will continue to struggle with it for years to come. But if the world were able to do that, I think we would probably be in a far better place.